Looking to stand out from the pack at your first job? When you earn a master's in management from Georgetown, you'll gain the skills employers value most, elevating your career prospects for years to come. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/MIM.
Welcome to the Smart Driving Cars podcast. I'm Fred Fishkin, along with Alan Kornhauser, the faculty chair of Autonomous Vehicle Engineering at Princeton University. We're at the Consumer Electronics Show. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Fred. Great to be in Las Vegas.
It sure is, and we just attended an exciting event, the announcement of an organization called PAVE, Partners for Automated Vehicle Education, and we have some terrific guests with us from the National Safety Council, Vice President Kelly Mantell, from the National Federation of the Blind, Mark Riccobono, and Vice President of Policy at Voyage, Justin Ehrlich. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Fred.
Well, Kelly, let's turn to you first. Tell us about this new organization and the National Safety Council's involvement in it.
Great. Yeah, sure. We're happy to be here. So as you said, we announced PAVE, the Partnership for Automated Vehicle Education, a new coalition comprised of about 24 different companies, safety organizations, tech companies, startups, all folks who are working in the AV space with the goal of implementing automated vehicle technology for our country to make roads safer, increase mobility, certainly address efficiency and energy utilization. So we're really excited to bring this broad group of stakeholders all together to speak with one voice and to help educate the consumer about automated vehicles. What's in the fleet today, and what's the promise of what's to come?
Why the need for education?
That's a great question. I mean, really, when you look at all of the media coverage around the confusion that the consumers have with automated vehicles, they're fearful of the technology because they don't understand it. I think, and I'll speak for my colleagues, we all believe that today is the day. Now is the time where we really have to start to educate consumers about the reality of technology and get them comfortable with it. It absolutely is a game changer when it comes to safety, and you can have the best technology in the world, but if the consumer's afraid of it, then it's all for naught. So we really think that this is the time to get out there and get ahead of it.
Justin, tell our audience, first of all, what Voyage does before you explain your role in this.
Sure thing. Well, thanks for having me on the show as well. So Voyage is focusing on deploying self-driving vehicles in retirement communities as a start, with the goal of bringing autonomous transportation to some of the folks we think need it most.
And you're doing that already.
So we have launched in the Villages in Florida. It's the largest retirement community in the U.S. with 125,000 residents. And we're starting to pick up passengers in the new year with safety drivers in the front seat. But we're starting to roll out the service to start exposing people to the opportunity that self-driving taxis can provide.
Very interesting. Now, what's your role with this new PAVE program?
Voyage was really excited to be a part of PAVE. It is, as was just mentioned, a coalition of folks from nonprofit, advocacy, academic, and industry, and we're thrilled to be a part of this unified voice. We think we're particularly excited to play a role in that we're picking up customers, and we're really being able to offer a sort of human-centric viewpoint where we can play back a lot of what we're hearing from our riders and share that with the group so we can better figure out what topics we think we really need to focus on in terms of the education challenge.
You're picking up riders now in automated vehicles, and they're seniors, right? So if you talk about public acceptance and fear of all of this, what is it that you are hearing?
Yeah, so we're hearing a range of things, but I think the thing that's most surprising and exciting is that people may not think of senior citizens as early adopters of technology, but we're getting a lot of real enthusiasm for this opportunity. And it basically stems from the fact that many people don't have the ability to get around, or they're fearful of driving at night. And when you introduce a technology that can really change their day-to-day lifestyle, that they're willing to experiment. And so I'd say on the whole, we've gotten a lot of enthusiasm and a lot more communities wanting to have us come to their areas as well. We've certainly, of course, also had folks raise some questions or concerns. And so part of our deployment is being over-communicating exactly what's going on, teaching people about the technology, and really letting everybody know every step along the way what's going on, so nothing takes them by surprise.
Mark, tell us about your role in this and why you're involved.
Well, the National Federation of the Blind works on raising expectations for blind people in society on a daily basis. We're a membership organization, and as blind people, we have, since the beginning, been completely shut out of the class of individuals who are drivers. And so obviously, not having access to the full range of options for moving around, for independent travel, it has a real impact on the opportunities that you have in society. But there's another component to it for us, and that is we believe that this is really a historic opportunity for us to think about developing a whole new system, but doing so in a way that's equally accessible from the beginning. So not just the power of the vehicles themselves, but what are the interfaces in the vehicles going to be like for people, and how are they going to be more dynamic than just visual displays, which is what we've defaulted to in existing cars today. That's going to benefit a lot of people besides blind people. And then we think that our role will also bring innovations that other people won't think about. If you're a blind person and you're in front of a row of vehicles, how do you identify which is yours? Well, if you're a sighted person and you got 10 automated vehicles that look the same, how do you identify your vehicle? We think we can bring innovative, out-of-the-box ideas to some of these problems, and I think that is what's going to really fulfill the promise of this technology, is opening up to as many people as possible. And from there, you know, the other component is, what is the delivery service for these vehicles look like? What are the economic models? And I think we have a lot to contribute in terms of thinking outside the box from the traditional car ownership model that has existed forever.
And of course, you wouldn't want to have to go back and retrofit the way so many things in society have had to be tackled today.
Exactly. I mean, we know that to go back and do that would be more expensive. It would not be as effective. And if we build it in from the beginning, taking advantage of a variety of perspectives, we're really going to innovate some technologies. We do think these vehicles, these services, are going to be covered under the existing frameworks of the law today. I certainly would think, we would argue that autonomous vehicle services are covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So why don't we just get it right the first time rather than having to fix it and fight about it later? So that's why we're really happy that PAVE and the partners in PAVE have been very receptive to our perspective and being at the table for these conversations. And we know from the nearly 8 decades that the National Federation of the Blind has been around that there is a lot of work to demystify the understanding of society. We work on this every day, helping to educate people about the real capacity of blind people. There's a lot of misconceptions, and so we bring a lot of understanding about how to influence society and change their perspectives and misconceptions about things. So that's what we hope to do as well as a partner in this collaboration.
And you had a terrific line in here during the panel about the number of accidents that are being caused by those of us who are sighted.
Yeah, well, we believe 100% of accidents are caused by sighted drivers. It is an important point that, of course, one of the groups that these vehicles are really going to be powerful for. We know that the group of individuals, the blind population that's growing the fastest, are seniors. We often say you should hope that you live long enough to be a blind person, because if you live long enough, you probably will be a blind person. And that is the group that really struggles with giving up driving, and that's where this these vehicles have an opportunity to allow them to maintain their freedom and independence, but also to help them understand that, that blindness is not the end of their life, and maybe create an opportunity for them to connect with other resources that will let them know that, that there's a ton of stuff they can still do even though they're blind. So that's why we're excited about these partnerships, these interconnections, and the opportunities that come from it.
And Alan, I know we've talked in the last couple of podcasts about some of the things that have been going on in Arizona with Waymo vehicles being attacked by people. And so an education program is really something that sounds like it's needed.
Well, I think there are two things here. One, it's really important to, first of all, understand what the customer really wants, and the customer is the person that's being moved. And it's one thing for these things to replace us, the car driver, to do what we want. But there's a whole segment of society, which we've just heard about in the last two, the elderly and the blind, who haven't had this wonderful mobility of having a car attached to our hip to be able to go anywhere at a drop of a hat and do that. And the third group that we tried to bring out that wasn't really mentioned is of course, the economically disadvantaged. There's a whole group of folks who really struggle, who have to wait who knows how long for the 606 bus of New Jersey Transit that never comes, to be able to, you know, just get to a low-paying minimum wage job, or to go get health services, or even to go to the store, or any of these things. I mean, and it's, I think, these folks that we need to be listening to, and not trying to sell them something at this point, to try to understand what would really benefit them, because we still have the opportunity to design this so that it's a benefit to them. Sure, we can design it for us because we know what we want, but I don't think that should be the primary customers, at least not for the driverless piece of this. For the self-driving piece, for the Tesla-like or Cadillac CT6, like, sure, okay, fine, but that's not going to handle the blind. It's not going to handle the elderly. It's not going to handle the economically disadvantaged, and I think those other groups, at least in terms of what I'm interested in seeing happen in this technology, it's to provide mobility for them, and we should be listening to that.
And at Voyage, Justin, so far you haven't run into any issues? Have there been community meetings, a lot of concern when you've gone into a place like the Villages?
So first off, I just want to follow up on,
because you've gone through this education process already.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that was emphasized before, and I think why we're getting a lot of good reception in our communities, is just this offering independence. And continual independence at a time when you're worried it might disappear. And so I think I couldn't have articulated the value proposition of Voyage better than has just been done by our fellow colleague. But in terms of what we've found, we've been testing actually in San Jose, in the Villages San Jose, in a much smaller community, for almost a year now. We did a lot of outreach up front. We hosted a program called Try a Ride Friday, where basically anyone who wanted to just get some exposure to it could come out, see the car, take a ride in the car. And generally, you know, I think we've been getting good response, but I think partly that's because we've been willing to talk to anyone who wants to learn more, and we will talk until they leave and they get all their questions answered. And folks do have a lot of questions sometimes, and that's okay, and that's what they should have, and that's why PAVE is so valuable. Because this is an ongoing dialogue with the companies who are building this technology, the advocacy groups, and the people who are riding it. So I see this as just sort of an ongoing dialogue that will continue for quite a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kelly, tell us
how this might roll out a campaign to educate the public.
Right, so this is not a one-and-done sort of effort. PAVE is going to exist for the foreseeable future as the technology evolves and continues to develop and roll out. And I think, you know, to Justin's point, a big part of what we want to do is to create a sense of excitement about the end game, you know, the fully self-driving vehicle. Why should people care about that? Why should the average consumer, you know, care about that? And why should they be engaged now while the technology is still being tested and developed and implemented? Well, the best way for us to do that is through use cases, you know, to really tell the story like Mark was talking about. Why is this important to the flying community? Why is this important to older adults, you know, and all of the other constituency groups? And so I think the power of PAVE is the makeup of our coalition, because we're representing all of those different constituency groups, and we're coming to the table and trying to be really thoughtful about how we're communicating and what we're communicating to those groups. And then I think, you know...
Has it gotten to the point yet where you know what forms this communication is going to take when you reach out to the public?
So today we launched our website and the start of our social media campaign. But
what's the website so people can check it out? Not yet?
I believe it's pavecampaign.org.
It is, pavecampaign.org. Thank you, Justin. It totally went out of my mind. Pavecampaign.org, and then on Twitter we're at pavecampaign. And so we're excited about that, but one of the really big things that we'll be doing over the course of the next year is doing some of the demo days, and so really working with our partners, because I don't think there's any better way of helping people understand than to put them in the vehicle, let them ask the questions, like Justin was saying, you know, we will stay as long as there are questions being asked, and so we're working with our partners on the PAVE Coalition now to set up 4 demo days in 2019 to put consumers in those cars and let them get a sense of what it feels like, what it looks like. I had a situation a couple of years ago when the National Safety Council was first sort of getting into the automated vehicle space, and we took our board out to California, out to Google to see the Google Project car at the time. My board chairman said to me, he said, Kelly, you know, I like to get in my car on a Saturday. I want to go left or right out of my driveway. You know, I like the freedom. I want the wind in my hair. I don't want a car to drive for me. You know, I don't see this. I don't see the need for it or the reason for it. We went out to California, and he had a chance to ride in the car and to really learn about what they were doing and understand the technology. And he got out of the car after his demo ride, and he said, sign me up. When do I get it? And when is this going to roll out? So we know that there's power in demonstrating the technology, and we're really excited about doing that.
I just had one other thing, which I think one of the things that we found super effective is we have operations specialists who sit in the front seat of our cars. And in addition to serving as an important backup for safety perspective, they also serve as an ambassador of this new technology. It is so helpful for riders to be able to talk to someone, a human, that they're comfortable with, as they embark on a new experience. When elevators were first launched and people were very worried about them, even after they turned electronic, you still kept an elevator operator in there just to give people comfort and explain how it's working. And I think we're seeing something similar here. So we really invest in our operations specialists, and we think that's going to be a critical part of the transition as well.
Even going forward, I mean, I assume there's a time when you would envision that you won't have the safety drivers.
Certainly over time, we will pull them out, particularly when we feel that it is the right moment for safety perspective. But I think what I highlight that is to just remind us that there is still this early wave of adopters who we want to have ambassadors helping to explain how everything works. And what will then happen is those early riders will then tell their friends and their friends, and then we'll start to see this usage. But it's really critical to get the first sort of evangelists of this technology to understand it and to be excited about it and to not fear it.
And word of mouth, I guess, plays a big role in it.
Exactly.
In getting people to use it.
Exactly.
Alan?
I think there's, and I agree absolutely with everything that's been said, There is one more other component. I sat on the Princeton Planning Board for 7.5 years and heard all the NIMBYs when we wanted to put a sidewalk down a street. One of the things about these vehicles is that they use our roadways, and the roadways are going to go through some neighborhoods. And every neighborhood that these things go through, those people need to be on board. They need, not necessarily educated, they need to be brought in on the whole discussion business, because in some sense, the benefits and the value to the society as a whole has to be made known to them so that they are willing to be invaded by these things and not have a hissy fit. Okay, and I don't know what that necessarily takes. One would think that they shouldn't. One thinks that these are public roads and everybody has a right to. I sit on my front porch and I see a truck going down my street and I say, "What the hell is the truck doing there?" You know, because I'm bad. But one needs to have these things part of the community and thought to be a fundamental value to the community. It's not for the haves and the super haves, or it's not for just this group. It's to try to bring everybody up, and somehow that message has to be brought that way to the community, to the people that live in the places where these things will necessarily have to operate, and not be thought as an invader from space, or an intruder in my space, and be welcome. I don't know how to do that. I mean, I think this is in some sense the critical element that we're at right now. We sort of have the technology, we have the equations, we have the supercomputers, we have all that. We now have to deal with this sociology and hey, I know nothing about sociology, so that's not me, but it'd be nice to have those folks brought into the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of the power of PAVE is, to really go after consumer education. And like I was talking about the demo days, we're also going to be doing policymaker workshops throughout the year with some of our academic partners, including Stanford and Johns Hopkins and some other universities.
How about Princeton? Whoa, we had help with those institutions. Come on, cut it out here.
We've got to do education for the policymakers as well, and ultimately, they're the boots on the ground in their own communities making the cases, and so I think it's a really concerted effort.
And also for the community organizations that, Meals on Wheels, or people that deal with some of these communities and provide support, they need to be, they're struggling every day to try to, at least bring some of these other communities up, and to me that's one of the fundamental, mobility values that it brings to us, and we should go after that and make that happen well.
And that's where some of the innovations will come, right? Because those organizations will identify the service opportunities for these vehicles.
Yeah, we learn from them. We learn from them.
Mark, I'm going to ask you to tell us, as we wrap up here, why this is important, why everybody should care and want to know about this technology.
Well, first, the most important reason, of course, is the number of deaths that happen on the roads today. Obviously, one is too many, but the number is currently much higher than that. And as a nation, we have an opportunity to innovate to do better than that. But the second reason is that we also have an unprecedented opportunity to use technology to really transform opportunities to give people mobility, freedom and independence in a way that we never have before, as we've talked about developing innovative service models, and to do it in a way that is responsible, and really having the hard conversations about the safety of technology, what does it mean, what are our thresholds, doing the education piece, and then really putting this technology out in the community and watching what the innovative spirit of Americans do with it. I think that's what's really going to be exciting. And that doesn't mean we won't have difficult questions to grapple with on a policy or technology or even society, access, equal access to the platform, but the opportunity for us to build something from the beginning that really empowers all Americans and creates new opportunities, I think is exciting and unprecedented.
And the website, once again, Justin, is?
PAVEcampaign.org is where you can find all the action of PAVE. And the Voyage website, which I'm sure you also were asking about, is voyage.auto, A-U-T-O.
Terrific. And again, it stands for Partners for Automated Vehicle Education. We thank all of you for being with us. Justin Ehrlich with Voyage, Mark Riccobono, National Federation of the Blind, and Kelly Mantel of the National Safety Council. I'm Fred Fishkin for Alan Kornhauser. Thanks for listening.